nobody's ever had a car.
Oh, really?
No.
But certainly there are numerous homeless people in Seattle who do sleep in their vehicles.
Yes, there are, but the folks who are sleeping in their vehicles evidently, you know, are content to go on staying in their vehicles instead of coming to Tent City.
Now, do police, have they changed their policies toward people who are not in the Tent City? Let me put it this way. Do you have a sleeping ban in Seattle?
Yes.
And does that include public and private property and vehicles?
Well, what... what it is actually, the police usually don't harass people sleeping out as individuals, at least, you know, in doorways or on sidewalks, even under underpasses. Where they start harassing people is when groups of three or more start you know, getting together. And that was the whole issue behind starting Tent City, because there's safety in numbers. When you keep people divided like that, isolated and invisible, they're more vulnerable. And at Tent City, folks can have hygiene facilities, better food, better community, but, you know, support each other, keep each other safe. There are all kinds of advantages to having, you know, people grouping together.
And of course, this is written about in the newspaper up in, not just, of course, the mainstream paper, but Seattle Times, but also in your very own Real Change.
Yes, Real Change has been very supportive to Tent City, to Cher and Wheel over the years.
Now, is Cher planning to send down a technical advisor to assist Camp Paradise in Santa Cruz?
Well, Camp Paradise and Santa Cruz haven't formally requested a technical advisor. Yet.
I'm authorized to make that request.
Authorized to make that request. Okay, I will take that request back to the next Cher community meeting. I know that one of the Real Change staff people, Adam Holdorf, came down to Camp Dignity and visited, wrote up an article on Camp Dignity, and we've communicated informally.
I'm sorry, how would you contrast Camp Dignity and Cher? Is that what it's called? What do you call yourself, Tent City or?
Tent City. Yeah, for...
What's the name of your mayor?
Or Tent Village, sometimes called Tent Village, too.
Your mayor is?
Mayor Paul Shell.
So it's not Shellville, but it's...
No way. We aren't going to call
of Hoovervilles, you know.
No, we're not going to call ourselves by Paul.
Reaganville.
We're very proud of being, you know, Tent City, Tent Village. Where am I?
Let's see.
Well, Cher and Wheel are very unique organizations in being started by, run by homeless and low-income people themselves, and being very long-running. Cher has been in existence since 1990 and now has 13 indoor shelters, including a transitional housing shelter, and also has a three housing for work houses, and a storage lockers, a number of other things. Wheel has a very high public profile. Wheel is the Women's Housing Equality and Enhancement League. Sure. That's homeless and formerly homeless women within Cher, working, you know, focusing on the shelter and safety issues of women. And
Cher is
And SHARE is Seattle Housing and Resource Effort, which is formerly in homeless and formerly homeless men and women, organizing self-managed survival resources. And both organizations also are very activist, you know, advocating for social change, putting a lot of pressure on the city for against the civility ordinances for more services, for more affordable housing, et cetera, et cetera.
I've read how recently SHARE was involved in some controversy around the Tent City Shelter, claims of mismanagement of funds or politically motivated use of funds. What's the lowdown on this latest breaking scandal?
Okay. Well, the lowdown is very low. The price of everything is going up all over the country, and wages aren't going up that fast. That's one of the things that drives homelessness, we all know about. Well, it affects service agencies and shelter groups also. And it affects nonprofits. It affects SHARE and WHEAL. Well, SHARE and WHEAL and a number of other shelter, you know, and larger, more traditional shelter agencies have frequently had, you know, have over the years occasionally had financial crises where because of rising costs and because the city's donation to their efforts doesn't rise in proportion to inflation, they've gotten stuck, you know, with a shortfall. And on each of those occasions, we've gone back to the city and said, you know, we've run short, and they've managed to come up with emergency funds. You know, there is a general fund. There are things to draw on.
This happens regularly?
Not regularly, but every few years, you know, somebody will go to the city and with a problem, and the city has always come up with funds. This year, SHARE, actually starting with November of last year, SHARE went back to the city and said, we're having a financial crunch. And instead of saying, okay, let's deal with the financial crunch, the city said, well, the city did a lengthy investigation of SHARE. And unlike the same investigation that they did 3 years ago, they found all sorts of problems that they never found 3 years ago. And the only difference between us and us 3 years ago is that now we're sponsoring Tent City. We're also opposing the city's proposed tracking system of giving homeless people an identification number and recording all of the resources that they use in a centralized file. Some of the claims that they make in their report are that we've taken donations that were sent in to support indoor shelters and applied them to Tent City. Those are totally false, and we have the records to prove it. They've claimed that we took expenses of Tent City and credited them to the shelters. And that's totally false, and we have the records to prove it. They have made insinuations about financial mismanagement. You know, it said, you know, you're short of funds, and this is, you know, you came to us, and, you know, you were short of funds in the very beginning of the year. That has to be financial mismanagement. Well, we're short of funds ever since the end of last year. And if you're on a small income and can't pay your rent and your food and everything, can't make ends meet. It isn't necessarily because you aren't managing your funds correctly. It may be because you don't have enough funds, and that's the case that SHARE has. the city even had the gall to suggest that we get a financial director who would make all the financial decisions for us and take, instead of, as we do it now, those decisions being made democratically by our membership. That would mean, you know, drastically changing our whole philosophy and paying at least $25,000 a year of what we don't have to eliminate some possible some possible unnecessary purchases that they weren't even able to identify. We've had clean audits for the past 4 years by an independent agency. And the city, in spite of their claims about financial mismanagement, cannot prove, you know, point to a single thing that's actually been mismanaged.
Now, what about the impact of the tent city on the homeless population more broadly? Have police continued to ticket people who are sleeping outside in greater numbers than one or two for safety? Do they people continue to do that? Is there a lessening of ticketing? What's happening?
The people are still ticketed. The ironic thing is that police often bring homeless people found sleeping outside to Tent City. At the same time as the city of Seattle is claiming that Tent City is illegal.
Estimates of the number of homeless people in Seattle are...
A figure that both the city officials and homeless people and service agencies themselves agree on is 6,000. You know, we think it's higher than that. The city says it's lower than that. We both compromise on, you
number
know,
of people in
6,000. 6,000, about 600,000. And that matches up with, you know, with the National Coalition for the Homeless. What my own studies show about nationwide is an average of 1% of people are currently homeless.
Across the way. By that I mean Vancouver,
probably.
British Columbia. If you were to compare this, have you been linked up much with the Vancouver folks?
I haven't personally. I'm not sure how it compares.
Got great mountains over there.
Yeah.
You should check
them
out.
Oh, yeah. What we do in Seattle. Anyway, so we've got about 600,000 people, about 6,000 homeless people, and beds or other facilities for about half that, for about 3,000 or less than 3,000. So a capacity of 100 people in Tent City is just a drop in the bucket. However, that drop is very important to the individuals who are staying there,
mm-hmm.
and it helps the greater community overall by raising the profile. Whenever we've run tent cities before, and during the period that we've had a tent city running, there's always more shelter and more housing starts up because it's a public pressure.
People are aware of the issue.
Yeah, right.
It's like in
visible homeless people are, you know.
The squeaky wheel gets the greasy poo.
Yeah. Yeah, and also, if we keep pushing it, sooner or later, the cases in the courts right now that, the disagreement between the city of Seattle and Cher over whether Tent City is legal is in the courts, and when it gets decided, as we believe it will, in our favor, We're pushing for the city of Seattle to officially tolerate any homeless person sleeping outside as long as they respect their neighbors. You know, don't go, you know, throwing your trash on your neighbor's porch, you know, or keeping them up late at night any more than if you were living in the house next to them, and then what's the problem? Yeah. Let people sleep outside a set a code of behavior and just have the situation behavior based. As long as you are being a considerate neighbor, it doesn't matter whether you're staying in a sleeping bag or a tent or a house.
Indeed, and in Portland, of course, the judge threw out the entire camping ordinance. You have a similar camping ordinance in Seattle.
We're going to have to conclude that Anitra Freeman interview possibly on Sunday when Bathrop's Fierce Broadsides returns at 11 o'clock. We're going to the final 10 minutes of Bathrop's Fierce Broadsides. And of course, I have calls backing up here. We have on the line with us Steve Elliott, Rockman D, as I call him. I talked earlier about Steve's court date coming up tomorrow, 1:32 o'clock at Department 1 at 701 Ocean Street. Steve, you have some breaking news about the city attorney Barisoni's latest bullshit.
Yes, how's it going there, Robert?
That's not bad.
Yeah, I made three attempts to try to get him to drop the case against me. I was definitely in two major car wrecks, I fall off a roof, and they don't believe me. And
this is to prove you're disabled, in fact, that the sign that you were holding up was not a lie, right?
No, not at all. One word, and they think they own the damn word. I mean, disabled means disabled. That's what it is. It's in the dictionary, and I got a right to say I'm unable to do work. And they're telling me that I'm able. They have no right to tell me I can be doing anything at all.
And you've been to the district attorney's office, moreover, to show them that you can put anything on a sign because signs are not deterred under the ordinance. What was the district, city attorney Barisoni's response to your point that you can write anything you want on a sign? It's only if you verbally ask for a request that
he never said anything like that. He just wussed out and said that they're going to keep charging me with the problem and that they're going to charge me with a misdemeanor, or that they could have charged me with a misdemeanor for saying that I'm disabled. You know, a man can't sit there and go through pain after day after day and say that he's not disabled. Who do they think they are?
These
scumballs in Santa Cruz are bullies, and I'm tired of it. They're bullying the homeless. They're bullying the disabled. What else are they going to bully?
However they can.
I know they can because they got power, you know, and that's the whole problem. They got too much power.
So what do you think of this protest at the vigil? You like that, the Camp Paradise vigil?
I think those people are getting a rotten deal. People have to live somewhere. You know, you just can't just disappear because they don't like it. They got theirs, and they don't want anybody else to have theirs, and they're letting all these foreigners in their country and taking care of them and wooing them, and we're, all the homeless people are losing their jobs, and here we are standing on the street, and they're telling us we're a bunch of a-holes, and I'm sick of it.
Well, you're mad as hell.
I'm mad as hell, and I'm not taking any more of it.
Damn
right. I'm under stress, and I don't like the way they're treating me in this town. It sucks, and I'm not leaving. I'm gonna put a box around my body, a big, giant refrigerator box, and I'm going to walk up and down the street and tell all these people what the fuck they are. Who do they think they are? They're discriminating against me. They have no evidence that I'm not disabled. They didn't look at my records or nothing. They didn't ask anybody anything. They just come up and give me a bunch of shit. I'm getting tired of it.
Well, I appreciate that, Steve. And you're inviting people to come to your court case
yes,
tomorrow?
Yes. If anybody out there has seen me sitting there in front of the Cooper House and has gone by me and has seen that I have never asked anybody for any money, all I've done is sit and look at the ground and begged. Just looked at it. If they've just gone by and see me and I haven't asked anybody for anything, you've seen that I've never asked anybody.
Correct.
The people in the purple shirts have seen that I've never asked anybody for any money.
Well, but Sergeant Baker feels he doesn't like you.
Baker, I've only seen him two times in my life, and he's never come by. He just comes up in a car and comes over and says, "You're not disabled." I tried to tell him, he wouldn't hear it. He doesn't know anything about me. He can't just sit there and write tickets to people for no reason. He has no right to do that. He has to have facts.
Well, let's hope that you win your case tomorrow, and I'll see you tomorrow.
Well, wait a minute. 3 days before I was even ticketed, I was beat up by these two punks that are out there beating people up again. They don't do anything to anybody for anybody. They should be out fighting those crimes. Those guys beat up a guy with a pair of knuckles, those brass knuckles. They hit him upside the head.
Now, this is a guy
the
called...
The same guys that beat me up in front of the Cooper House 3 days before I got my ticket and broke my rib again. And I had all kinds of contusions and stuff, and I got a fractured rib. And they did nothing for me because it's a garbage crime, because we're considered garbage, and I'm sick of it.
So this is the man that was assaulted on Sunday night?
Yeah. He's hurting, and they don't know nothing. They're doing nothing. Who do they think they are? They'll harass some disabled people and homeless people, but they won't go out and fight crimes. And that fat, donut-eating piece of shit, Baker, he's the biggest fucking goddamn liar ever. He's going to go into court and lie that I begged for change. Who does he think he is? That's why they're going to win the case, because they're going to say I begged for change and they can charge me with a soliciting charge. I've never asked anybody for any money, ever.
And it's, you know, soliciting charge sounds like something serious. It means asking someone peacefully for a dime.
I've never asked anybody for anything. I said, anything helps. Anything. Spit on me, kick me in the head, whatever. I've gotten a share of it. If people want to hand me money, fine. If they want to hand me food, they have. You know, if they give me advice, fine. I don't care. I never asked for money on my son. I never asked for money for anybody. I just sat there like an innocent piece of crap, waiting to ask, saying, I'm disabled, I'm hungry, I'm homeless. Anything helps, please. Where does it ask for money?
Well,
they're pushing me around. You know, I'm not a scum. I'm not a piece of shit. And I don't like to be hassled. I have done nothing wrong. I've kept myself out of trouble for 46 years, and now I'm being treated like shit. And I don't like it.
Damn right. I gotta go.
Okay.
All right, tomorrow in court, 1:30.
Okay, I'll see you there. If anybody out there wants to come and help me out, I need help. I need as many witnesses or people to come into that court and sit there and help me out. I need people. If you're out there listening, get your ass down to Department 1 tomorrow. It's in Judge Joseph's. He's not a bad judge because he dropped my rock case. I hope he's not a bad guy. He's not going to run me through the mill. I hope they haven't gotten to him.
See you tomorrow, Steve.
Goodbye.
Bye-bye.
And that was a passionate man who is pissed, and sounds like he's pissed for a good reason. And you can join him in court tomorrow. I'll be there. Invite you to be there as well. Now let's get the update on the Mumia Sentinel protest.
Give me a quick call here.
Hello?
Hi, Free Radio Santa Cruz calling in.
Okay, yeah. This is John Chilkin with Santa Cruz Coalition of Freedom of Man, Bruce Jamal, and all political prisoners. And we had our little march down to the Sentinel on Wednesday.
Mm-hmm.
It was fairly successful. We picked up another 15 or so people as we marched past the farmer's market. We ended up with about 40 people when we were at the Sentinel building. And the editor actually came out and talked to us.
You think he talked to you because of the increased numbers, or had he planned to?
I'm not sure. I mean, I talked to him earlier in the day. He said he didn't want to meet with us under pressure at the 4:30 conference.
And you showed up at 6:30. Were you kind of, were you heckling the Sentinel, saying, come out, wherever you are?
No, we weren't saying, come out. We were, I guess, discreetly across the street, not directly in front of the building. Maybe that had something to do with it.
I see. So it was your good manners that lured out the editor, huh?
Something like that.
You got to avoid these good manners, man.
Yeah, I know.
I also saw a story in the Sentinel recently that there's charges have been filed, or there's been some attack on the fundraising activities of the MIA group in Philadelphia. Have you heard about that?
There's conflicting information about that. I talked to Jeff Mackler today, and he said that the International Concern Friends and Family Mumia is able to accept funds. However, they're not able to advertise or solicit for funds at this point.
Hmm.
That is what the story is from Jeff Mackler.
Hmm.
There's been other stories that say that basically they can't... somebody got the impression they couldn't accept funds, but it's actually not the case. They can't accept funds.
So what's the update on Mumia that we should know about in the last 2 minutes of our show here?
Okay, well, Mumia is going to appear in court on August 17th in Philadelphia, and they're going to be petitioning to have a couple things. One is to have the attorneys recognized by the state as being valid in the state of Pennsylvania. The other thing is that they need to have new evidence introduced, the Arnold Beverly affidavit concerning Arnold Beverly's confession that he's the real killer of Officer Faulkner. They want to have that admitted at the state level. And basically, we're asking people to turn out. They can either go directly to Philadelphia, or that's getting to be very expensive right at the moment because airplane tickets are off the chart when you don't have 2 weeks' notice in advance. The alternative is to protest in Santa Cruz and in San Francisco. In Santa Cruz, it's going to be a protest August 17th, Friday, from the first part of the protest is going to be 6 to 8 p.m. We're going to have a little march down the mall at 7. Start off at the clock tower, first of all, at 6 o'clock. And by 7 o'clock, we'll have a march going down the mall and come back to the town clock by 8. And from 8 to 9, we'll have kind of a candlelight vigil at the town clock because it'll be getting dark by then. And then the next day, there will be a mass San Francisco rally from Mumia from 12 noon to 2 p.m. at Powell and Market Street in San Francisco. There will be carpools leaving town clock approximately 10 o'clock in the morning, assemble there at 9:30, leave by 10. And for more information, you can call 425-4467. That's our voicemail. It has all the updated information on there.
Repeat that number again, could you, John?
425-4467.
Mm-hmm. And is that pretty much the update?
Yeah, that's pretty much it for now.
Hey, congratulations on the protest. It was quite more successful than I'd imagine it would be.
Yeah, I was kind of surprised that the guy came out at the end.
I think it was your charisma, John.
Whatever.
All right.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you.
Bye. And that about wraps it up for Bathurst Pier's Broadsides here. We're getting a patient reception from Mookie, who's covering for Uncle Dennis. Going to put on the Earth First tape in a moment. I want to thank you for being with us tonight on Bathurst Pier's Broadsides. I just got an interesting bit of news in the mail from the Citizens Police RARA Board, which has its meeting, I guess it's coming up on Monday. That's always the second Monday of every month. They finally, perhaps my urging or somebody else's urging, got Chief Belcher to release his findings on the infamous May 1999 Yugoslavia rally. And, of course, as you might expect, even though the Citizens Police Review Board, because they had an independent investigation funded by the City Council for the first and only time, although we didn't get to see it, the CPRB found that there were four charges in which they sustained complaints against officers, including Officer Lefebvre, who is no longer with us, the man who was punched out by Steve Argue, who was in the process of torturing the woman Juliana and her child, and Argue enabled these two to escape, as well as the other protesters allowed the other man and his child to get away from that protest when the police improperly moved on the protest. Excessive force complaints against Lefebvre were upheld by the CPRB after an independent investigation. However, Belcher's report does not uphold those charges. And, of course, there is nothing about this in the Santa Cruz Sentinel. What would we expect? Anyway, I appreciate your being with us. We're going to be covering this report in more detail on Sunday. Please come to the table where it's happening, or come to Camp Paradise. The table is at Borders, near Borders Bookstore. It's a 24-hour table. And please join a Tent City in the event that Camp Paradise is closed down or attacked by police. This is an issue for all homeless people in the Santa Cruz community. Even though we're focusing on Camp Paradise, this is really the issue of the camping ban and the right of homeless people to sleep at night. If you want to get in touch with me between shows, the easy number to call is 423-HUFF, 423-4833, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom. I'll be back with you on Sunday at 11 o'clock, and thanks for being with us on Free Radio Santa Cruz.
Politicians have lying eyes, as sure as suffering multiplies, the rich will never be poor. As certain as in life you learn, the rich have money and time to burn. The rich will counsel you, wait your turn, in heaven you'll get some more. As sure as poverty plagues the land, the rich will give you a helping hand. As soon as mountains return to sand and oceans leave the shore, count on nothing in life so well, that if the rich go straight to hell, lots are something they buy and sell. They'll never enter the door. Clearly all that you need in life to be at peace in a world of strife, the company of a man or wife and lots of money in store. Life is simple and so complete, with faithful friends and some bread to eat, a solid roof and a room with heat and stocks and bonds galore. The rich will probably tell you nay, it's inner riches that really pay. The rich have always got lots to say as they watch their assets soar. Count on nothing in life so plain, the poor have water, the rich champagne, the market it rises to this refrain. The rich will never be poor. The rich will never be poor. As sure as life is a strange strange affair in need of some robust repair. The rich don't actually have to care. The rich will never be poor. Maybe people are all the same, but the rich are playing a different game. You take your chances and take your aim. You'll never even the score. The rich can't help it if life's unfair. The richer people, they really care. They often mention it's hard to bear. They're burdened at their core. Some say no, but it's plain to see the rich are different than you and me. The rich are different as they can be. The rich will never be poor. The rich will never be poor. The rich will never be poor. The rich will never be poor.
And with utmost thanks and respect to Robert Norris, his organization, the Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom. You are now listening to Earth First Radio.